accession number 20589, reel 9.
R. Wigmore, reel 9. Right, so you're coming into Hamburg. About what date is this, roughly?
What month? About May. May the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been May the 3rd, I think.
Yeah, roundabout. Okay. So how did you get to Hamburg? Did you walk? We
went in troop carrying vehicles along the Autobahn into Hamburg, and the company commander was leading the way into the area of Hamburg we had to go to, and we came up against roadblocks. I might add that all the civilians were in the cellars, the buildings, the destruction was terrible.
Were you shocked by what you saw?
Hamburg, yes. Hamburg, the destruction was terrible.
What did you say and to each other when you saw the destruction, the state of it?
Well, I'd seen the results of bombing in London. But London was terrible, but it was, Hamburg was far worse. I never saw Berlin, but I saw Hamburg. And the destruction was terrible. The people that had survived were all in the cellars, if there was any cellars there. But we came up against, by the time we reached, started getting near our area where we were going to stay, we kept coming up against roadblocks. They'd been expertly built with concrete blocks and sandbags, and that we could have moved them in quick time, but there was a fear of them being booby-trapped. So the powers that be, the officers and that, they got all these old men, civilians, some of them were really old men, civilians, older than what I am now, out of the houses in the surrounding district and made them dismantle, well, make a gap for us to go through, because we couldn't get through. And they made the gap for us to go through. I did feel sorry for those old chaps. And, because not only that, the roadblock may have been booby-trapped, but they weren't going to risk our lives to remove a German roadblock, sandbags and big heavy blocks of concrete, and they moved the gap for us to go through, and we went to a area of Hamburg that hadn't suffered, as far as I could see, hadn't suffered through bombing. It was the docks area had been, like East London is to London, the area where we were wasn't the area that had been bombed.
What sort of houses, what sort of area was it?
Very professional people. In fact, the house we were billeted in was a surgeon with a son at university.
And the family was still there, were they?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
How did they take to having you billeted on them?
Didn't think much of it, I don't think.
But
you see, some of these people, our people, our men, they went into the bedrooms and all that kind of thing. Well, we never did. We were given this one stairs, downstairs room. We were given a one downstairs room with a glass doors. And I kept my, by then I was a corporal, and I kept my section all together.
And we how many of these?
We slept on the floor. Well, in a section at that time, I think I had about 9 or 10.
Right. And you all stayed in this one room?
In this one room, yes. But then we had to go out and do guard duty on the displaced persons camps. So we weren't there all that much. We was only there one night, then away a couple of nights, then back again one night at displaced persons camps.
So this, this German family, did they feed you at all?
Or no, we went in the cook house for their meals.
Right, okay. Do you remember their name?
No, not really, no. I would have known at the time, but I don't know now, no.
Did they talk to you at all?
Yes, they spoke English. They were university people. Mm. Yeah, they spoke English.
Or were they friendly or interested in you? Or?
No, not friendly, no, no. They just tolerated you.
Did you get the feeling?
I had the feeling they were on the side of the Nazis, yeah.
Did you feel any anger to them? Or?
No, we didn't, no. This son, the son used to play the piano very well. And we were told, I don't know what night it was, it must have been about May the 5th. We were told that Churchill was going to make a speech that the war was over at a certain time on, I think it was May the 5th, and I asked this man, like the doctor in charge of the house, who was the head of the house, he was a surgeon. So his son told me. I asked him if we could go in and listen to his wireless at a certain time, and he said, yes, all right. So at a certain time, we went into their sitting room, and he turned the wireless on. And, of course, electricity was on, all right. He turned the wireless on, and we listened to Mr. Churchill's speech, which was about 10 minutes, quarter of an hour. And then when it was over, we came out. But I liked the arrangement there. They kept themselves to themselves, and we kept ourselves to ourselves. And I had my section all together. There was nothing worse than having men who you're in charge of, and I was only a kid. There was nothing worse, because I still wasn't 20.
No. So you had men in your section who were older than you?
Oh, yeah, they all were.
Really?
Yeah, and there's nothing worse than being in charge of men. You don't know where they are. And that was why we had this nice room, opened out with the glass door onto kind of a garden patio. And we had a palliasse. By then, we had a palliasse from somewhere. And we all stayed in this room, in the one room all together. There's some platoons and some sections. They never knew where they were.
So, now tell me about the displaced persons camps.
Displaced persons camps, they were... There was lots, thousands and thousands of Italians, which I think the reason for that, I don't think they were displaced persons as much as prisoners of war, because Italy changed sides. And with that, all the Italian troops on the German side were declared prisoners of war. And they were all in these hutted camps. And we just went into their guard room by the main entrance, and they used to bring our food round, the tea in a big thermos container, and food. We used to bring it round, and that was that. I think we were a bit of a novelty at first, but they wanted to roam wild and go round Hamburg in, I don't know, reprisal, what else they planned to do. And we had to keep them in.
Right, so they were locked in?
Yeah, we had to keep them in.
Right. What sort of a camp was it? Was it a
hutted
building? It was a hutted camp with a
wooden
wire.
Huts, not Nissen type. Mm.
Wooden huts.
Wooden sectional huts. Mm. But I think the main reason for us being in those positions was it was to keep them in and stop them from roaming around. Not only Italians, but all nationalities. It was to stop them from getting out into Hamburg, I think.
What state were they in? Were they
well? They
well
looked
dressed,
they looked all right to me.
Mm.
Some of the, yes, I suppose they looked all right. I mean, what time of time they had, I don't know.
Did any of them speak English, did
you say? Oh, yes, Italians, yes.
What were they saying about their story about how?
Well, it was mainly administration of the camp, mainly, that they were concerned about. Mm-hmm. That they... some of them didn't like each other, and they used to say, oh, I want those moved out of there so as they could move in there, and all that kind of thing. I said, well, I'm not interested in that. I'm here to stop you from getting out. I don't care who lives with who. There's administration that they were mainly concerned about. Where their food came from, I don't know. They always seemed to look well fed.
So how long did you guard them?
In Hamburg, on May the 8th, my 7 days leave turned up on VE Day. They were having a company party on the evening of May the 8th, the company commander said, oh, we'll have a party. We got plenty of beer and stuff, wine and that. Of course, my leave was May the 8th, so I never went to, not as I bothered, but I never went to the party.
Oh, so where did you go on your leave then?
On May the 8th, I came home.
Right, so.
I came home to just up here.
Right, so. How did you learn about your leave, and how did you...
Well, I already knew the date a matter of a week previously. I was already told the date or read it on company orders or something. And, I mean, at that time, I didn't know VE Day, the official VE Day was going to be May the 8th.
So how did you travel back?
By train
to
Gennep in Holland, where you stayed a night, where I got in a tent with some French Canadians. How I come to be in their tent, I don't know, but
I
was in this tent with French Canadians, only one spoke English.
And that was VE night, was it?
That was VE night, yes. And then the next day, from Gennep in Holland, to Calais, mm-hmm. Calais to Dover, and was ever I glad to see White Cliffs of Dover.
So how long had you been away then?
Well, just about the year, mm-hmm. about the 12 months. Mm.
So you came back on the train
I came over on the ferry from Well, same as everybody else, from Calais to Dover, and it was a lovely afternoon, and the sun, it might have been morning, or I don't know, it was morning or afternoon. It wasn't evening, because I was home in daylight, so it couldn't have been, it must have been the morning, because I was home about in the afternoon, up here, up by the Duke of Monmouth. Mm. And the sun was on the White Cliffs. And that was it.
Yeah. So you had 7 days leave.
Yeah, 7 days leave. I think I had another couple of days because they used to form a bit of a bottleneck. Mm. The ferries and the dock ports couldn't take it all. They formed a bit of a bottleneck and they put it on the... You had a number of your leave block, your leave party, you might say, and they give it out on the wireless. And so you turn the wireless on, and one morning I turned the wireless on to listen to these numbers, and the number I was in was delayed for 2 days. Exactly 2 days. But I don't think I was the only one that had extra 2 days. It's because of the bottleneck, you see.
So where did you go back? When you...
I went back to Hamburg, same place. By then, it was about the end of May by then, getting off the end of May, and I had my 20th birthday at home. Of course I did.
On leave?
On leave, yeah. I had my 20th birthday at home. Yeah.
So how long did you stay in Hamburg?
Might have been another week or two. Then we moved down to, they started sorting out the occupation areas, presumably the American, British, French and Russian. They started organising, because when you finish the war, you see, we weren't, but you could have finished the war in what was to become a Russian sector, presumably, or the Americans might have finished up in the British sector, or vice versa. So they started sorting themselves out for the sectors of occupation. But by then, we came back to a small German town. I don't know, I suppose it was near the Rhine. Opladen. From Opladen, I suppose in the meantime, they're sorting all the people out as well, because the Japanese war was still on, you see. And they were sorting out personnel, and I was one of the people being sorted out. And 36 NCOs, that was sergeants and corporals, well, I was a corporal, were posted back to England in one group and posted back to the 2nd Battalion, which was the airborne, the glider battalion. And I was receiving flying pay before I knew it. And went up in the gliders a couple of times.
So what was the job of them?
Well, they were mobilising for the Far East.
Right.
Like they had already, like they were the group, they were the battalion that took Pegasus Bridge. They specialised in glider drops. Mm-hmm. So and they were the regiment, our 2nd Battalion, took part in the Pegasus Bridge capture. I suppose they thought, well, we want a few blokes with experience. The Japanese war hadn't finished. And we got sent back to Bulford, And we used to go up in the gliders from RAF Lynham. Mm-hmm. And then when you've been up in the glider so many times, you had a little badge to put on your arm. Glider badge. And that's a whole new story.
Yeah. So where did you go to the gliders?
Well, we used to go out. You'd go out over the Solent and then come back in. Mm-hmm. But we just used to sit there, go up and come down. Didn't used to take no notice.
Right. So how long were you there?
At Bulford, well, we were. You'd do training and go on the range, and of course, and then we were in this big camp at Bulford near Salisbury. And then the Japanese, then they dropped the atom bomb and the Japanese war finished. And so we was already mobilised to move. Well, in the meantime, we got married in the July. Oh yes, I had disembarkation leave. We got married July, that's 55 years, day after tomorrow.
Right, because you thought you were going to Japan.
Yeah. And Far East, yeah. And then we were all mobilised, like that kind of unit can move at a 24-hour notice. And to cut a long story short, we finished up in Palestine.
Oh,
right. And that's a completely different culture.
They sent
a culture
Palestine.
Shock.
Right. So where did you go to in Palestine?
Oh, all over.
Yeah.
Jerusalem, Haifa.
Yeah. When did you get to Palestine?
We landed in Palestine in the September, 45. September. Mm-hmm. August, the Japanese war finished in August. We were in Palestine in the September.
Right. And where were you based?
Jerusalem for 9 months. Well, I knew it was better. It's all autumn now. Bethlehem is 5 miles from Jerusalem, 8 kilometres. Haifa. Caesarea.
Mm-hmm.
Athlete. Gaza, Gaza first of all, yeah. All that areas.
What were you doing there?
Keeping the peace between the Jews and the Arabs. And they're still trying. The Americans have got it now.
So what sort of things were you doing?
Well, something we used to like doing was the 48 hours government house guard. It was a company guarded government house, and you did 48 hours. That was 2 nights guarding government house, which was up on a hill outside Jerusalem, and you could see all. You looked down on Jerusalem. And you dome on the rock and this and that. Oh, I forget the names now. Yeah. I was there nearly 2 years. That was the first 2 years of married life.
So how often did you get home?
Didn't get home at all. No. I came home on Liap. That's leave in advance of Python. Towards the end of the war, or maybe after the war, I don't know, they brought it out that nobody would be overseas more than 3 years. Apparently, I don't know, but this is what happened to me. No one was overseas more than 3 years. Well, and you had to have a month's leave in that 3 years. So that was, I was on the way to completing a Python of 3 years. So I got my month's leave and I came home in the spring of 47. I went back for 3 or 4 weeks, then came home again in the June for good. Right. And that's the end.
So what were your feelings on leaving the army after all that time?
Well, I just got married. I was glad to get out of it.
What did you miss about the army when you left?
Not having not to think. Everything is planned for you. Everything, your accommodation, your meals, is all planned for you.
What was demobilisation like? Because that's a bit of a sort of ritual to go through, isn't it? You have to hand things in and so on.
What mobilisation?
Demobilisation. Demobilisation
was very quick. We arrived in Liverpool, those that were in our party, there was about a dozen, I suppose. Very quick. We had one night in Liverpool, in this camp, and we were all within a few hours, we were out of the army. Within a few hours on the train home, on the train coming home from Liverpool to Oxford.
Did that feel good?
Oh, lovely.
Was everyone pleased to leave the army?
I don't know anyone's inner thoughts, but I should imagine the ones that came out was. Mm. Well, some of them went back. Mm. Some of them that couldn't seem to fit in. I mean, I was...
Reel 10, R. Whitmore. So did